So basically, what's new since Siren Jones?
Oh, what's new?
Yeah.
That's a very wide question. Now, we've done a bunch of touring, obviously. We decided that we... Thank you very much. I mean, so much happened. It's really hard to just summarize this in a few words. I'm going to talk for a bit now. I hope that's okay.
Please. So you're here for that.
What happened was, towards the end of the touring cycle, we ended it a little bit earlier than we normally do. We probably tour maybe almost 3 years on an album. The world is big, so we want to go everywhere. We want to go everywhere a couple of times. That takes a lot of time, but. Daniel felt that he didn't enjoy touring as much anymore, and he was missing out on his kids growing up, and there's no arguing that. So obviously that was a huge difference for us. So that's one thing that happened. We started writing very early because we knew that, okay, let's not start fresh, but yeah, in a way, let's reboot and start with a new album, and we do the album first and then we think about drummer later. We had the opportunity to talk to a bunch of our absolute favorite producers. We were really lucky to have phone calls with all of them, and we ended up working with Howard Benson, who...
And flying to LA.
What's that?
And flying to Los Angeles.
Yeah, so that's the reason why we ended up in LA. But, I mean, basically all these guys were either... Well, they were spread out. There was some in England, some in Canada, some in the US, some in Europe, like mainland. But I think that the one thing that we had decided before was that we're just going to write the album, we're just going to record it and then look for a drummer. Also, we can't record at home because we need to be focused. It's very easy to be distracted.
If you do that in Göteborg, you won't focus enough hours per day.
There's a risk at least, and right. We didn't want to put ourselves through that risk. So what we wanted to do is be somewhere we can totally focus on just this, and also having the opportunity to talk to all these guys. We wanted to let them actually do their job, you know. We wanted to have their input. We wanted to let them pour their experience on us.
The added value of an external producer.
We've had producers pretty much on every record, but it's always been a co-producing thing, and we've been super protective of our music and never really let go. I mean, we didn't let go now either. We would never, but we used Howard, well, we used this the wrong word, we worked with Howard in a way that, and he explained it to us on the phone already, and then when we met him, like, I'm not going to turn you into something you're not. What I want to do is just make you focus and make the best influence album you can make.
It was very different, for example, compared to working with Roberto?
Yeah, Roberto is, I'd say, he's an amazing guy. He's a really good friend. He's more of an engineer guy. He's really good at his craft. But we weren't open enough to listen to his ideas. We just did our thing and he made it sound good. And same with Daniel and same with Fredrik for that stuff, you know? And we weren't open for it at that point. But now we decided, okay, this guy has done everything from Motorhead to pop, to death metal, to he's done everything. Let's listen to the guy, and then let's open up.
It's kind of weird, because you could imagine that a young band would need such guidance and to be helped, and then yeah, the value of an external producer, but with more and more years of experience and tens of albums behind you, you could say, we don't need any more of that. And that, in fact, seems to be the opposite.
I think it is definitely the opposite. I think... The opportunity first. We've never had that opportunity to work with one of those guys because they've been sort of unreachable. And when we started talking to these, we talked to 8 or 10 different producers, including all of the good ones.
Yeah.
And each and every one of them had heard about us or knew very much about our careers. And I was in awe
How satisfactory is that? That you have a guy.
It was scary.
I'm from Inflame.
Yeah,
Inflame, the guy.
And they would talk about the different albums. Yeah, you had that song there. And I was like, you know, and which was awesome because that means they keep their ear to the ground, they understand what's going on, and they would understand us. So each and every one of these could have been the producer. But Howard said the right things. He didn't want to change anything. He didn't want to turn us into something we're not. He just wanted us to focus, you know. And we used him as a filter, as a wall to bounce our ideas off of. And his having the studio in LA helped too.
All right. But I had the feeling that what Benson from TG's work is really kind of North American rock, or, you know. And you were not afraid one way or the other that he would kind of transform, mutate the band.
That's
to something.
He said it before us. I'm not going to. You guys have your established sound. You know what you guys want to do. I'm just here to make it good. I mean, better. Hopefully, better.
But just by tweaking stuff or saying, should you try this way? Did you try to do that? Or
no, he was there as a filter on everything, like in the songwriting process already.
That's good, that's not good, that's good. We work on that.
I wouldn't say like, shit, good, shit, good. He wouldn't. He would never say that. But what he would say was like, yeah, that's really cool, but not as long. You know, and maybe that part, explore that further, like do that.
Develop
more.
That, yeah.
And it was really good to have that outside perspective. And normally we never do that. You know, we've been very protective. When the music's done, we put the lyrics on top, vocals on top, and then it's done.
Just to mention that, especially for the last record, you were a very heavy contributor, musically speaking, writing the music. For this new album, I couldn't see the album. What's your contribution?
I've always been. It starts with me. Always.
Right.
It always does. All the riffs.
You bring the riffs, you bring...
It starts there.
Real spark, and then boom.
Yeah, and I mean, normally I could have whole song ideas ready and show the guys, and we talk about the arrangements and everything, and then it turns into an Inflame song, and then we put the vocals on top. This time around, I had my bag of riffs, you know, I go there to LA with Anders, and we started, since we already were about to open up to a producer and listen to his advice, we started talking about how we could make our collaboration better, more smooth, and see where we could take that. So we were working together on the vocal stuff, and we approached songs sometimes from that angle, and we'd never done that. And Anders was poking in the arrangements and different melodies. I don't feel that melody, can you make it, you know? And so that was, we've never done that.
Mm-hmm, okay. So you mentioned, so big change for the since Siren Charm, so a new drummer with Joe Raka.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understood, first he was a session drummer, you need a session drummer for the album, and then it was to check also the chemicals within the band with him. So it went fine, then Booby went smoothly to official member. That's how it worked.
Well, pretty much summed it up there, but it was like he's Howard's guy. You know, when he has an artist coming in that only has like an album but no band, he would probably be the guy drumming on it. Or if they needed program drums, Joe would be the guy who programs it, right? And he's a very experienced musician. He's been out touring a lot, both big shows and small shows. And he's just the guy. So he came in, helped us out with the program. I always do the programming, but I keep it very simple in order for a drummer to create the sound on top of it. And Joe came in and helped me out with the program. Sorry?
You keep it simple and you're yourself a drummer? You could...
I was never a drummer.
Things up, you know? Ah, okay.
But no, it would be wrong to do it because we had Daniel for so many years, and Daniel had his sound, his way of drumming. So why would I tell him what to do? You know, it's what adds what we need for this band. So certain things I would go really into detail, like the kicks need to do this because the riff is this way. But most of the stuff, like if it's a verse, I'll say this is the generic vibe I want, and then you know you figure it out. And we did the same thing here. Joe came in and did his flavor on the programming just to have something for whoever was going to drum. And then he said, well, this is how I would have played it. Maybe I should give it a shot. Maybe I should play Bill Bramson. Yeah. And he started playing. It was, this is fucking awesome. You know, this is so good. And such a small step away from what Danny was doing. His same approach, same attitude towards the instrument and everything, obviously, but also that consistency. You know, we decided we have this
precision.
Precision. We decided, well, this break needs to be in the first, before the first chorus, and then we do that every time. You know, and I like that in a drummer.
Consistency.
Consistency, and you can rely on that guy, and you don't need to worry that. I mean, we had different drummers with us on tour when Danny was on with, you know, newborn kids and everything, so we had excellent drummers. But they get bored after two shows, and they start improvising. It's like, and all of us are like, what the fuck is going on? You know, it's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
So, and I'm not comfortable in that. We're not a jamming band, so it's not like, yeah, for me it's important, you know. So I really, really dig that. We all really dig that. And also the fact that he's a very easygoing, relaxed guy. So we asked him.
Okay.
Towards the end.
If it's that easy, that's great.
Yeah. And it saved us not only a lot of time, but a lot of headache.
Sure.
So you just imagine finding a new drummer replacing Daniel, and this guy was already here.
Good. Excellent. The main second change, that it's the change of in terms of business label. You were Nuclear Blast, then Century Media, then Sony with Simon Charles, and then you come back to Nuclear Blast. Without giving any secrets, why? And do you think it's a step up or a step down for Inflames, or a step in the middle?
That's really hard to tell. I've always liked Nuclear. We've always liked Nuclear Blast. They were such an important part of our history. They, I wouldn't say discovered us, but they really helped us
expand.
They exposed us to the world. They showed us the rest of the world, so we could start touring in other territories than Sweden. Actually, start playing shows in other territories. And they also have been such an important partner for so many years. But we just felt at the time when we changed to Century Media that it was time to do something else. I mean, same with the studios, with producers. Fredrik, we did a bunch of records with him, and then we felt, well, we're done. You know, we've done everything.
New cycle, go to Berlin, new cycle, go to LA.
You know what I mean? It's like, and that's just a fact. And then we tried out different, I mean, Century Media time was really good. Sony time was really good, really interesting and learning period. I think that the one sad thing was that Sony didn't really have a metal department. And of course it was because frustrating for both us and them, I think.
Because you have the idea that when you sign into a major, you try to stay with the major as long as possible. Not just for one.
Well, we always sign short contracts because we want to be able to, I mean, it's choice. The same with our music. It's, we decide, you know, I don't want to be stuck in something you suppose somebody else wants you to do. I want to do what I want to do.
Yeah,
all right. Maybe egotistical, but it's actually, it's true for everything we do. So coming back to Nuclear Blast was obviously, it felt really good. The same guys are working there. The same heart is there, and I'm sure we can do great things together.
Okay. So now with Nuclear Blast, the future you'll see?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a step up or a step sideways, but it's...
It's a step.
It's I think, the right thing to do.
All right. If I check the discography of the band, roughly you seem to keep the pace of releasing a new album each 2-3 years. Now in retrospect, you think it's the natural rhythm of the band? Creatively speaking?
I wouldn't say so much creatively. I think it's more a practical reason. In the beginning, we used to have a record out every 2 years because we didn't really play live. I mean, we played a few shows, maybe a short tour, but now our touring schedule is huge and we love it.
Yep.
You know, so we really want to tour. Now, the reason why this touring cycle got cut short was, well, again, Daniel quitting. So yeah, it's I'd say the normal rhythm would probably be 3 to 4 years.
All right. If I tell you I find the record, I would say compared to previous work, especially Siren Charms, easier to dive in, catchier, more direct. You have a direct contact with the song compared with Siren Charms, where I think you needed to listen it a few times, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, try to dive into the music. Would you agree, or it's just my feedback? But it's
that's the beauty of music. It's a taste thing, right? I'm never going to tell you what you should like. I can just present what I like, you know, and that's what we did with Siren Charms. That's what we've done with every album so far, and that's what we did with Battles. For you, obviously, this is way more direct. That's what you said, right? And I think there's songs on Siren Charms that are so in flames, it's ridiculous. But maybe it's dressed in different clothes, you know, and maybe it's not as obvious for you. And I agree. I mean, I'm a huge Van Halen fan, right? But not every one of their records speaks to me the same way as Van Halen 2 or 5150. They're totally different, but they're both Van Halen, right?
Yep.
But there's other albums in between that might not be my favorites, but I leave it at that, and I listen to Van Halen 2 and 5150.
All right. So there's no... you let your mind, your creativity speaks, and there's no hidden agenda or
there's no plan,
or
really.
Plan or strategy. It's a kind of musical strategy to go somewhere.
The only goal is to do what we think is good, because that's the only thing I can plan on, rely on. That's the only thing I need to satisfy. If the five of us, well, four, this case, are happy with it, then negotiation is over. You know, I don't need to listen to a record label. I don't need to listen to a management. And honestly, I don't need to listen to an audience either, because I can't really satisfy everybody. We can't satisfy everybody. What we can do is satisfy us. And when we're done with that, it's all other people can judge it. I'm done. I love this album. I love Siren Charms.
So, and I don't talk especially about this record in general. Yeah. You would be happy if the album release makes you happy, fits your needs. If no one
it would be tough, obviously, because if nobody wants to see us, I don't get to play live.
Yeah, sure.
And that would suck, because I really, really do love playing live. But we can't write music that way, because I don't know. I mean, you like a certain style. That guy over there likes a different style,
sure.
And for me, that's just like it would make me schizophrenic and doing something I'm not supposed to do.
All right. What do you think of new recording technology now? Everything's Pro Tools. If you have stuff like Auto Tune and everything, so do you think it's kind of a blessing or evil?
Oh,
or it's just a tool and you do whatever you can with it?
I think for what I do, it's awesome. Like, auto-tune I don't really care about, but like Pro Tools and stuff like that, making demos, I mean, you should have... Did you ever make demos?
No, I'm not a musician at all.
So this is the difference, right? So I connect my guitar to my guitar rig, whatever, that's a sound card in there, it's connected to my Pro Tools system, I press space and I start recording. And if I need a drum kit that sounds actually pretty good, I just click on the mouse, kick drum, snare drum, blah blah. Very simple. I can build and copy, paste, cut, edit, change speeds. I can do whatever I want to do today. When we started out doing demos, it was either you just played an acoustic guitar in and recorded it with an old like cassette thing, or you had a Porter Stevie if you had some money. If you wanted to have drums, you had to have one of these old drum machines and make patterns and sit there and like...
very limited capability, memory, whatever, yeah.
Not only memory, it's just very not practical, you know? And there were so many limits, you couldn't try all your ideas you had in your head. Because you had four tracks. You had four tracks. So you did drums on one track, mono. And then you did two guitars, the harmonies. And then you bounced all that. So you had three to a mono track. Then you had three tracks again, which you put melody guitars, two of them. You bounced that together. So the quality in the end, and it was such a practical, logistical nightmare.
Right.
So from that point of view, it's great. But also, I think everybody now is a producer, which they're not. You know, everybody can do something that sounds half decent, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that it's quality.
Okay, I understand. Just one last question, and we'll after that we have a small quiz. In 2015, Epiphone released a limited edition Björn Gellert signature Les Four custom. How did that make you feel? Is that kind of a peak of a guitar player to get your own?
It's not like they released it and I got surprised.
I suppose maybe younger as a guitar player, you say, I've got the lapel from another guitar player you love, and you say, I would be maybe in the future I would like to get my own stuff.
I never thought this would happen, obviously. I was very fortunate early on when I started playing the guitar that we were working at the time with ESP. And before they did the LTDs and stuff. So I was playing, my favorite guitar of all time has always been a black custom Gibson. It's always been that. And I think the custom together with the Marshall is like the sound. It's the marriage made in hell. Perfect, you know?
Right.
So the first chance I got was with ESP. And they were really cool, ESP Japan. I got to play the Eclipse model, which is similar to a custom Les Paul, and then later on I finally managed to get a hold of a proper Gibson custom Les Paul Black Beauty, and it's been the guitar that I've been playing. I've played it a couple of thousand shows. I don't know how many records I've done with it, and I've refretted it, and I have
customized
day too. In every way, you know, and I remember we were playing, I think it was Ozzfest, and Zach Wild's Guitar Tech, because they were playing right after us on the main stage. So Armand, who passed away a couple of years ago, he came with a bag of Zach Wild's hardware for the guitar, so we put that on my guitar, because I wanted some of that magic, you know. So this guitar is extremely special to me, and I felt that I already refretted it once, and it's done all these thousand shows. It's time to retire it. I was about to hang it on the wall, but it's the one guitar I want to play on. So what I did was I had a friend in Germany, Alexander Markus, do all the measurements. He's a guitar builder, so I was about to have him do a replica, so I could have that instead and play it. And right along the same time, Epiphone approached and said, hey, we should do a signature series. And I was like, this is the best timing ever, because we have all the measurements, we know all the materials, we know everything in there. Can you just make an exact copy of this? And they did. So now I have an endless supply of awesome guitars.
Great.
And I wanted to make it affordable. Because kids nowadays...
€600 to €800?
Yeah. And just imagine, if they would have said, which they started talking about, yeah, let's do a Gibson signature. Who in their right mind would buy €3,500,
sure,
maybe €4,000 guitar that says Björn on it? Who would do that? I wouldn't.
Yeah, you know, it's so pretty affordable. I checked the price. I say, just an idea to get how much it's cost.
Yeah. But so what I wanted to do is something that I never had the opportunity to do. Because if we wanted to buy a budget guitar or something that was affordable, is a better word, it was a shit guitar.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do a shit guitar. I wanted it to be, and it's the exact same guitar. It's a Gibson custom Les Paul, but different headstock,
yeah,
and a little bit of different finish in the lack. That's it.
So you had fun doing it?
Very much. I will have a new one out soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Thank you.